Off the Chains is sponsored by Simeon Brothers Creative, Design, Print, and Promotion. For any of your graphic design needs, follow Simeon Brothers Creative on any of your social media platforms. That's S-I-M-I-A-N Brothers Creative.
With the ace, yeah. Fizzle man with the face, yeah. Sexy beats call me Nate, yeah. Got too much sauce on my plate, yeah. Devin Owens with the left hand. Shout out D-Money from the West, man. E-Mac, I'm a true boy, yes. White Jesus, stay blessed, man. It's about time, ain't it, Johnny? But I can't name like everybody. Shout out Big Trump, Katrina Allen, Val Jenkins, Wysocki, Seppo Payu, Matt Dollar, Sarah Holcomb. I say, boy, stop me. Jessica Weiss, that girl is a beast. They crushing it like Double G, yeah, yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, hello and welcome to another episode of Off the Chains. This is episode 6, a disc golf podcast for those who have a true love and passion for the sport. I am your host with the most, of course, Cody Unervold, PDGA member 148739. And I'd like to kick off this week's episode by discussing the David Reed Memorial. And that was a beer tier event that I took place in this past Saturday in West Chicago, Illinois at Crest Creek Farm. Now, I went into this tournament playing it blind and didn't get a chance to with all the bad crap weather we had with the rain and all that this past couple weeks now. So I didn't get a chance to really go out there with work and all that and the bad weather. However, I played it blind, and after a 2-over first round, I just refocused, practiced some putting for about 20 minutes, and ended up taking a playoff, shooting a 4-under second round, finishing 2-under for the tournament, and forcing a third-place playoff. And after playing hole 1 and holes 2 and 3 in rotation 4 times each, we finally got to the point where we were like, the closest to the pin on this hole wins, because we're just going to be here all day. He ended up shooting about 30 feet short. I ended up parking right under the basket, and yours truly took home a third place trophy for the 2021 David Reed Memorial. That's right, I did it. I took a podium finish, everyone! So, I am very happy about that. I do have this week off until I head up to Peru, Illinois, and Streeter, Illinois for the Illinois Valley Invitational, ran by one of my newest friends. I can't say good friends, newest friends, Miss Casey Glade, who is trying her best to get people into this event. If anybody listens to my podcast, if you've ever played a tournament before, if you've never played a tournament before, please go out here and play this one. The course, Marilla Park and Streeter, is very a little wooded, so it'll be very fun trying to shape shots around trees and this and that, whereas the Peru course, Baker's Lake, is way more open and gives you an opportunity to really go for birdies. So that would be Illinois Valley Invitational. That's taking place October 23rd and 24th, next Saturday and Sunday. So, all right, so we're moving right along here into our weekend recap, and that was the pay-per-view style. That's right, I said it. The pay-per-view style USDGC, and as I talked down about it last week, saying that, oh, I'm not gonna buy into this because I'm not paying that pay-per-view price to watch a tournament when I can watch Worlds for the Disc Golf Network thing. I ended up caving in because after the third round that happened for the women and what happened to Paige Pierce, you can understand why I ended up paying it. But I got 20% off for being a member, so I ended up getting paying $20 instead of $19 or $25 or whatever it was. So very excited, I guess, about that. So I got $5 off. Woohoo! But yeah, moving into our weekend recap, if I can get it up here and running. Since I wasn't able to catch all of the action going on, I will be doing a thing on here. So, if I can find it, here we go. So, and this is brought to you by the PDGA and my buddy Grant Zellner. So this is for round 1.
It's just special out here. You step on the hole one, and it's just kind of holy ground. So when everybody's here, you see all your friends from all across the country, really all across the world, especially with, you know, this year people are coming back after some COVID stuff, and we're seeing some of those European players and some of the Canadians coming down. So
it's just now, ladies and gentlemen, if ads show up during this, I apologize in advance.
In the books, the Throw Pink Women's Disc Golf Championship and the 2021 United States Disc Golf Championship here at Winthrop Arena. We started things off in style. I'm Grant Zellner, recapping the action. The women teed off first, competing for the Throw Pink Women's Disc Golf Championship. And after one lap around the Winthrop Arena, several find themselves with work to do. Among those hopefuls, Katrina Allen and Paige Hsu, both double digits back after just 18 holes. Sarah Hokum, though, her sidearm served her well. She'll be on the lead card tomorrow. Also, Heather Young, 100% circle one putting today, seats her in second place, tied with Valerie Mondahano. In first, though, with a five-stroke lead, it's Paige Pierce. A bogey at the first, and an 8-under par. The USDGC started off in style. A host of players sit well within striking distance, but at the end of day one, Joel Freeman, despite a double bogey at the last, sits in solo fourth at 8 down. Greg Barsby thrilled the crowd and admittedly himself with a bogey-free 9-under par effort. He's third. Terry Roethlisberger went 8-under.
Put it in reverse, Terry!
And finds himself at 10-under, tied for first with none other than a former USDGC champion, Nate Sexton, who showed absolutely no rust and carded no bogeys. Forecast says rain, but the heat will only rise as the 2021 United States Disc Golf Championship moves to day two, and more USDGC coverage will be coming your way.
All right, so that's a preview of round one, where it saw all the old school players like Barry Scholtz and Johnny McRae all on the chase card, and it looked like it was a good start for Dickerson, or not Dickerson, I'm sorry. Terry Roethlisberger and Greg Barsby were up there. And then for the women, it was also Paige Pierce. On to round two!
My uncle, actually, he, for Christmas, he, got us to play.
These are just all interviews for, like, fans at USDGC.
And we just got the bug.
Winthrop Arena Course, day two of the Throw Pink Women's Disc Golf Championship and the 2021 United States Disc Golf Championship. The weather today, pretty indecisive. The play, that's a different story. I'm Grant Zellner with a recap. In the Throw Pink Women's Disc Golf Championship, day three, typically known as moving day. Why? Well, maybe because on day two, not as much happened, but a few players took advantage of the situation. Sarah Hokum, one of those who fell down the leaderboard while Deanne Carey moved up, starting her round off with this 60-foot bomb on hole number two. Deanne Carey ties for the hot round of the day at 4-under par. Owen Scoggins had the other 4-under par round today, also moving up the leaderboard. Paige Pierce started the day off with a 5-stroke lead on the field. and extended that lead early in the round before running into some trouble. Here on hole number 11, more than 80 feet out and in the hazard, Paige Pierce nails the putt to save par. The lead card remains much the same as it was when the day started, with Valerie Mandujano retaining her spot alongside Heather Young. Round two of the USDGC started off with a little bit of a different theme going on. A lot more movement amongst the players. Cool things happen at the USDGC. The youngest player in the field, Evan Scott, reigning amateur world champion since turned pro, on the same card as Barry Schultz, one of the eldest members of the field. Over on hole number 7, Drew Gibson, if you can shoot like that, you can wear that bucket hat, Drew, in for an ace through the bamboo on hole number 7. Over on 17, Andrew Marweed with an ace run of his own, a different outcome, off the band, off the hay bales, and out of bounds. Johnny McRae showing he belongs yet again. The man is timeless because of putts like that on hole number 5. Checking out our leaders coming into the day, Terry Roethlisberger.
Put it in reverse, Terry!
Shot 4 under par today to remain on the lead card. But Chris Dickerson with the hottest round of the 2021 United States Disc Golf Championship surges into the lead. An 11 under par effort puts Chris at 17 down in solo first. Ricky Wysocki with a 9 under par round of his own plays his way into second place. And Martin Hindle of Canada finds his way onto the lead card as we move to day 3 at the USDGC. The weather on day 3 looming, but with so many players in contention, nothing will shake their focus. Stay tuned to PDGA.com and all of our social channels for updates.
So after round 2, so Deanne Carey for the women making a surge for the Throw Pink Women's Disc Golf Championships. And also Valerie Mandujano staying in a pretty good spot. And then also the men, Nate Sexton unfortunately falling off a little bit, as well as Terry Roethlisberger. And just when it looked like Chris Dickerson and Paige Pierce were going to pull away with the USDGC and the Throw Pink Women's Championships, just when you thought it was happening, then unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, round 3 happened. If I can get it to load. Now it just wants to be slow. So give me 1 second here. Hang on. Sorry. Good thing with watching YouTube videos. You like to get these things that do this, unfortunately. Are we going to get it to play? There we go. Okay. There we go. Unfortunately, stuff happens on a podcast, everyone. Not everything's perfect. So we get to have errors like loading errors. So round 3.
Encouraging women and girls to get out and play and have some fun playing disc golf.
I'm screwing everything up.
That's a good reason. Absolutely. I'm here for the charity aspect of it, you know. Raise money, and it's good for disc golf, good for women, good for Throw Pink. That's why I'm here.
Thanks, Bill.
For 2 days, the skies held off at the 2021 United States Disc Golf Championships and the Throw Pink Women's Disc Golf Championship, but today they unleashed, and so did the players here at the Winthrop Arena. I'm Grant Zellner with a recap. In the Throw Pink Women's Disc Golf Championship, Heather Young doing Heather Young things, canning this one from deep. Deanne Carey matching that effort with her own downtown chain banger. The story of the day, though, Paige Pierce, 18 over par for the round, thanks in part to not one but two quadruple bogeys, including this one on hole 10. She's now 13 strokes behind the lead that she once held. Owen Scoggins, though, taking advantage of the situation, playing her way up the leaderboard. Her putt was on point, including this long one for birdie on hole 16. Valerie Mondajano remains on the lead card. Her drive and putt earns her a rare birdie on 17 on the women's field. Haley King, once thought of as out of this tournament, finds herself in second place going into the final day, where she'll have to chase down none other than Missy Gannon. Every part of Missy's game working today. She shoots a 4-under par third round in inclement weather to take the solo lead into the final day of play. On to the USDGC, the third round played in the rain for most of the lead cards. Canada's own Martin Hendel retains his spot in the top four with a 4-under par effort. Drew Gibson plays his way onto the final card. His putt working for him in the rain today. Chris Dickerson started the day in the lead and stays on the lead card with his own 4-under par effort. But Paul McBeth, the story of the day, 11-under par, zero bogeys, and a number of long circle one or circle two putts cashed in. Drives like this one, 391 feet with a putter on hole 16. But Paul McBeth in the driver's seat for the final round. After three full days of action, multiple players in both fields still in contention for the championship. We'll see what happens. Stay tuned to PDGA.com for updates.
So yeah, after round three, guys, it just seemed like I said, after round two, it seemed like Dickerson and Paige were going to win. And then, yes, you heard that right, ladies and gentlemen. Round three, Paige Pierce shot an 18 over round. And it ended up being 846 rated. And it was the moment everyone had been waiting for all day. Where was Paige Pierce going to do? Entering the day at a 5-stroke lead and sitting at 7-under par, the wheels absolutely fell off for her as the conditions out at Winthrop were unfavorable, but like Pierce's game that day, when it rains, it pours. There's just no sugarcoating her round, where she shot, like I said, 18-over par, the third worst score on the day, or 23 strokes worse than Macy Valadiez's fifth 5-under par hot round, who was sitting in fifth, sorry, formerly known as Macy Walker, as she just got married. Paige shot two quadruple bogeys, one triple bogey, three double bogeys, two bogeys, and were a result of 14 OB strokes. Nothing seemed to go right for her on the day, putting only 46% from C1X and hitting only 50% of the fairways. She currently went from first place and currently sat after round three in 17th place at 11 strokes over on the tournament. Now on to round four.
On a course like Winthrop, you have the room to actually have quite a few people out and about versus a heavily wooded course. And so just to see the hundreds of people that are going to be out here, and I'll be here all competition, it's going to be special to see that.
Entertained. The arena course at Winthrop University in Rock Hill, South Carolina delivers yet again. I'm Grant Zellner, one final time with a final round recap. Madison Walker starting the day off right with this ace run on hole one. missed it by that much, but we knew the day would be full of fireworks. The story, Missy Gannon, this for birdie on 7. Missy in the hunt all day long, saving par on the tricky 9th hole. Now coming down the stretch, this for birdie on 15 for some much-needed breathing room. With hole 17 and its island green looming, Missy, in fact, missed the green initially. So this to save a crucial bogey. One more time, Missy from 40 feet. Shrugging like Michael Jordan, Missy steps up to 18, just needing to navigate the out of bounds, and does so with this upshot, putting herself inside the circle with a stroke to play with. She would lay up and have this tap in. Missy Gannon, 2021 Throw Pink Champion. Going into the final round of the 2021 USDGC, so many still in the hunt. Drew Gibson, Nate Sexton, Joel Freeman, Chris Dickerson, Ricky Wysocki held the lead for a brief time during the round, but it all came down to Kyle Klein and Paul McBeth. Playing on separate cards, Kyle throwing haymakers, birdie after birdie. McBeth responding with stellar play of his own. Kyle in for birdie on hole 16. Paul one hole behind on 15, this to save par. In through the corridor of trees. It all came down to hole 18 where Kyle had this circle two putt. Possibly for the win off the cage. He taps in for par and waits. Paul with a deep birdie opportunity of his own on 18 in front of the crowd. Off the chains, down the hill, but not too far. Paul taps in his own par, and we head to disc golf overtime. Kyle makes the mando on the first playoff hole, but misses the second gap, putting himself 40 feet away and obstructed. Paul ace runs, and then has this 25-footer coming back to win the 2021 USDGC.
And may I just say,
it's been an incredible season. Thank you for following the PDGA. And now we look forward to 2022.
And I just want to say, the way Paul reacted when he made that putt to win it gave me chills down my spine, as it showed the signs of the old Paul McBeth back. Maybe at the start of 2022, maybe we're getting a return of Paul McBeth at domination. We'll see. Maybe McBeast mode is back. Who knows? But yes, congratulations to Missy Gannon and Paul McBeth, your winners of the 2021 Throw Pink Women's Disc Golf Championships and the United States Disc Golf Championships. And to hear more from the man himself, Mr. Paul McBeth, courtesy of the Nick and Matt Show, to talk about his win.
Oh. About this big win, we've had him on numerous times,
and like I said, if there is ads that pop up, I do apologize in advance.
He just won a big one, everybody. Let's welcome to the show Paul McBeth. How are you doing, Paul?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
You are doing pretty well. First, let's just start out by saying congratulations, as I did, but as part of that, it's coming up in the conversation that was a big payout. In fact, we just found out it was a stat that's the largest cash per throw, if you break it down that way, for any normal PDGA stroke play event. That's the largest cash per throw ever. You set another record. So
it beat Jeremy's 3-round one.
It did by a lot, actually. I didn't realize this until Evan was telling me yesterday, earlier. But yeah. Can you take a guess, Paul, really quick, how much you think you made per throw?
No idea.
Well, probably just under $10 per throw. probably like $9.75.
Come on,
$9.73.
Oh, is that a real guess? The disc like 260 times, huh? And you made $20,000.
No.
Yeah, we're not talking cash per throw. Your whole career, we're talking about at this last tournament.
I have this whole career as well. Because I only threw the disc 200 something times.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, so then I guess okay. it's like closer to 100.
Yeah, okay. What is it, Evan, real quick?
Entire career is $8.17 per throw.
Oh, career. Okay, what was the event? Okay.
Oh, this one? Oh, $83
or something. Yeah. So I just wanted to bring up, it's got to be an interesting thing as an athlete to talk about money, especially when it's yours, but something you announced at the beginning of the season was all of your earnings are going to the Paul McBeth Foundation. Do you have any idea of what your winnings are this year? I'm sure Evan can pull it up for us real quick, but do you have any idea on what you've funded the foundation with this year?
Yeah, it's just shy of $79,000 right now.
Baby.
So yeah, so I guess that's the current PDGA record for money all time in a year. So I know that.
Oh, okay.
For an off year.
I was just going to say, so
for a washed up guy,
the money has increased, but that is excellent. We can't overshadow that. The fact that that is all the highest payout for a year ever has gone to a foundation, not even the player. That's epic. That's epic.
Yep.
Okay.
That is correct.
So, Paul, how does a win like this leave you thinking about your 21 season? Because you just actually did quote Mark saying, you know, an off year or whatever, down year. How does this win leave you feeling about the full season? Does it change anything for you?
I mean, it doesn't change anything. You know, that's definitely the goal every year, is to go out and focus on the majors. You know, those are tournaments, you know, that are career milestones. So it doesn't change anything. I mean, that's what I work for each year, is to take down those majors. All the other events they're big events, you know, or I wouldn't be going to them, but those are the ones that really have my focus. And, yeah, I mean, I was a James Conrad shot away from having Worlds and USDGC this year. So, I mean, it's a pretty successful year if you ask me. Mm-hmm.
All right, Nick, I know you guys talk off air, but feel free to ask him a question.
Okay, sounds good. I was going to say, I feel like I picked his brain the last 2 days anyways. No, but on a serious note, talk about your third round. You played in the pouring rain. You went out and you shot, I think it was the hot round that day. And then going into the next day, what were the differences? You know, what was your mindset going into round three and your mindset going into round four?
Round three, I kind of just woke up and I felt like I was just in a good mood. And just like, I knew the rain was coming, you know, woke up, looked outside, it was raining already. And I just kind of knew, like, I could either look at this and be negative about it, or I could just play in it and know that everyone's going to be playing in it and just focus on my shots and moving forward. I know the turf isn't going to be as grippy, so I'm going to have to take a little bit off, and I'm going to have to find a way to, you know, work through that throughout the day. And in the warm-up field, I was actually warming up, and Bradley Williams walked up next to me and started warming up. He said, "Wow, the shot looks really good today." And I was like, "Yeah, I think I just know that I'm going to be slipping out there. I know to just get off my feet as quickly as possible, like put my plant foot down, throw the disc, and get off of it. Don't try to plant real hard and stay there, hold the follow through, like get off that pad and let the disc go and go from there." And it worked out really good throughout the day. I don't think I had any OBs, had no bogeys, and I made a lot of circle's edge, you know, inside the circle or just outside the circle putts pretty much the whole weekend, but especially that third round. And then mindset for round four was I had a couple strokes. I had one stroke on Chris and then a couple on the rest of the field. So I knew hot round. If I shot the hot round, I'd win the tournament no matter what. But that clearly didn't happen. And I knew I was in the lead. So I did have some strokes to give throughout the round. But I just had to keep it close no matter what until the end. And that's when I pretty much had to go all out if needed and really push, because I know I can birdie that final stretch if I need, but I'm not always going for that every round.
Yeah, and I kind of want to talk about that, how it started closing out from a fan's perspective. We saw earlier two-thirds of the way through the round, you faltered, you got a double bogey, then you started playing out, and you started hitting some bigger putts that you needed to make. I'm thinking of what's that triple Mando hole where it takes a hard left and it goes into the woods there. It feels like you saved a nasty par there. Yeah, 15.
Yeah, 15. Yep. That one, I thought I did my drive really good and it would just end up being a little short. That's one where you can just really push it far if you want. But sometimes you bring some trees into play, but if you can get into that right spot, it's a fairly easy upshot. And I just left it short. Got into the bushes a little bit and had to throw a forehand roller, and then had to throw another forehand roller. But I walked up on my third shot to kind of see. I saw I needed to get it right to get into the gap to have a putt. So preferably I would have been a little closer, but I still had like a 38 footer with nothing in the way, just a low ceiling. And it was really dark in there. That was the hardest part, was how dark it was in those trees. So that one, knocking that one down, I knew as long as I didn't bogey in that situation, I was going to have a chance. So that par save to me was really big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so exactly walking through that, and then you go to hole 16, and then I'm just going to jump right to hole 17. Everyone's calling that a massive putt. If you missed that putt, was it OB from your perspective?
No, I don't think it was going OB. I mean, it still had probably another foot to go up in order to go OB. And I don't think it was going left enough to go OB. But actually 16, I missed it so bad from a similar distance that actually helped me make the putt on 17 and make the slight adjustment I needed of just getting. So it was almost the same distance, but the opposite way. So I knew after watching that miss on 16 that the only adjustment I had to make was put hyzer on it and let it float there. Cause I got it too flat on 16. It kind of just died in that wind and just dove right into the ground. So then 17, I just put that hyzer angle on it and let the wind carry it there. That really helped, was, you know, having the wind the opposite direction as well. So right to left.
Yeah. And I'm going to throw some of the commentators under the bus, and maybe it's fuel to the fire, but I think they called out that was probably the worst putt they've ever seen of your career on hole 16. So
I just misread the wind. And that's why it just kind of wobbled. I kind of got it flat and that left to right, and it just slammed it right to the ground.
Mm. And so, but then you stepped up to 17 and hit a massive putt, and you could tell at that moment, I feel like we can tell at that moment, what were you feeling? What was going through your head hitting that putt?
Well, so I guess before that, when we were on the tee pad, we got up to the tee pad of 17, and I'm like, all right, I need to check the scores. I need to see how aggressive I have to be here on 17. Cause I knew Kyle was ahead. We were at 25, I think. And he was on, I think he birdied 17 or something like 16 or 17 like that. So he got to 26. Then we get to hole 17's tee pad. I check in scores, and his score changes to 24. And we're like, what the heck just happened? Like, his score is still not in on 18. Did he miss his putt, double bogey, and now I'm up one? Like, what's going on here? Because it didn't show that he was completed. So I was like, all right, well, I just got to put this on the island. And so I went to forehand and played it way right. So a lot less aggressive than I would have been if I had to birdie it. So put it on the island, start walking down the fairway. People are like, no, he's actually at 26. They're screwing the score up, you know, two better than it says. So now all of a sudden I went from thinking I was up one to down one. Now I need a birdie either 17 or 18, and I'm on the island, so I'm not in the best spot to run it, but I'm on the island, so I have a chance to run it. And then I just kind of told myself, it's like, all right, I don't know what his score is. I just need to go for the birdie. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, who knows? He could be at 27 for all I know right now, and I'm still at 25 because maybe he made that putt on 18 that he's still sitting circle two at. So ran that putt, made it, and I knew it was huge because – I still had a chance to birdie 18, and even if he was at 27, I'm about to, you know, catch him in time right now. So that's what my mindset was right there.
Yeah,
I mean,
go ahead, Nick.
So now you're going up hole 18. You throw a shot in the middle. You get your second shot. I don't know, how far do you think it was? 45 to 60 feet. I'm not really sure.
Yeah. So on the tee, it was still that left to right strong headwind, and I was like, all right, just get it in bounds. No matter where I am in bounds, I'll be able to reach the green. So it was a little bit shorter than I wanted, but I was in bounds because I didn't want the wind to carry it OB right or do something weird and lift it and make it hyzer out left. So I kind of threw a little shorter, and then threw my Onyx from there. I would say it was probably 55-60, probably closer to the edge of circle two. And again, I still didn't know what his score was. I didn't know if I trusted it or not. Like, is he in there adding his paper card? Is he at 27? Is he not? So I told myself, all right, you know, you're either going to make this and win, or you're going to make it and tie. And then I told myself, if I miss it, at least I ran it. But I'm either going to be tied or I'll lose by one. You know, I never had the thought of going OB cross my mind because I just felt like in that moment I was gonna make it or at least keep it close, and I would say it was maybe an inch left of being in and just ending the event right there.
Yeah, and like, this is just me. I talk about disc golf every week and think about disc golf multiple shows, and I'm like, I'm glad you answered that. What was going through your mind? It was just the mentality of I'm going to make it, and at least if I don't, like, I tried. And because we were thinking about Worlds, you had that catastrophic moment happen to where you played the percentages the right way and it went one way. I felt like here at USDGC, you were like, I'm going to take control here and try. Is that part of what it was?
No, it didn't have anything to do with Worlds, because I was kind of in that spot to take it, you know, so it would have been the opposite of what happened at Worlds. But I felt like Kyle might have been thinking that, you know, with his putt on 18 of, oh, Paul, you know, Paul had James take it from him, and he felt like he was probably in the driver's seat at that point, to where if he made that putt, he wouldn't regret laying it up or whatever. So I think he ran it more so than I did in my situation. But I don't know. I just felt like I was going to make that putt. So I went for it. You know, I didn't have any doubt in my mind there wasn't a moment that crossed my mind to lay that one up.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So you missed the putt left side. You make the next putt. You guys are tied up. Scores finally go through. Now you're going into a playoff. We had Andrew Zimmern on earlier, and he was talking about kind of his perspective on everything and just thinking that, you know what, Paul's probably got in his mind that, you know, he's not in a playoff against James or Ricky or Eagle. He's in a playoff against Kyle Klein, who's having a great year this year, but he hasn't been in too many of these massive positions of, one, this is competing for a major, and two, this is a playoff against, you know, one of the top three players in the world at the moment. Did you have any mental mindset of like, you know, oh, it's a playoff against Kyle Klein, or it's a playoff just against any other competitor? Like, are you treating them all the same? What's your mindset going into the playoff now?
I don't think it had anything to do with Kyle. You know, I think if there was any other competitor, you know, like Rick or when I had the playoff with Will or Eagle or whoever, you know, they're very gettable holes. It's kind of holes that are who's going to make the first mistake, really. You know, 117 and 18, they're not extremely skilled shots that we have to throw. 18 maybe the most, but it was just really who was going to make the mistake first, and he just kind of, again, with that right to left, he put a little bit hyzer on probably a slightly overstable putter or mid-range and kind of carried into the bush, which was probably more so the common mistake because people wanted to focus on making the Mando before anything. And it's just naturally easier to throw a hyzer than try to throw the flat shot like I did there and just let it float and get over that log. So I think a lot of people would have made the same mistake he did.
And now, do you have any, you were saying how you weren't thinking about Worlds going up to your last putt. Did you have any thoughts of where your putt was on the playoff hole of your 2014 playoff?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I saw that log. I saw it was pretty much gone. And that was kind of like, you know, I felt like that was kind of the moment I had right there is I'm in the same spot. I can make this putt and it's going to completely wipe that away, you know, that miss from my mind and pretty much, you know, the history of having, you know, me losing a playoff here at this tournament. Yeah. So, you know, that was kind of the representation I felt that putt had. Now it's just flattened like that log.
And I think a lot of people can probably agree with this, but we saw more motion out of you those last six holes, especially with those big putts, than we have more so at other tournaments. And I guess we'll just mainly talk about that final putt. All the pictures that are going around Instagram and Facebook right now, it's probably the most, I would say for my perspective, one of the most intense kind of like surreal moments of your emotions coming out. Like what was on your mind when you did make that putt?
Well, I think cause I was more frustrated with what was going on with the scoring than anything. And I was just kind of frustrated with how I let that tournament slip a little bit. By not playing that well, but still being able to fight back and stay in it. And it was kind of just that, you know, I felt like I was fighting in that moment. And that was, you know, what that putt meant was, you know, just me continuing to fight and just continuing to fight through my frustration, but also being just excited because I'm taking advantage of these moments that I have and this, you know, this putt that I had in front of me. So 17 and then in the playoff, very similar because, I don't know. There's just so much. I don't know. I don't want to use the word doubt, but similar to that, like in the sense of, I didn't know what was going on with the scoring there. I didn't know what was going on, you know, with a lot of things in that moment. So as soon as I made it, I was like, all right, now I finally know what's going on. I just won this tournament, and I was just pumped up, and I don't know. It was cool to see the picture. So maybe that'll be a new norm. We'll see.
There you go.
I'll echo what Nick said. I think most fans most fans of Paul Macbeth and those who are really strong fans of disc golf probably experienced that emotion as well. I know Hunter, you're one of your biggest fans here at my house, was just like epically jumping around when you hit the putt for the playoffs. So it was a big moment, minus that one. Can you pick?
Well, I do want to add one more thing.
Yeah, go ahead,
one
Paul.
More thing. One thing too is when, after the Conrad throw-in, you know, I was walking up 18 and kind of knew, like, all right, I just won my sixth Worlds. Like, this is awesome, but I wasn't going to celebrate. And now after having Conrad just take that from me, it's like, I need to live in the moment. I need to experience this the whole way through, you know, from beginning to end. So I think that's kind of a lot where a lot of the emotion came from too, is, you know, I can't let my guard down at any point. So that's kind of,
That makes sense.
Oh my goodness. I don't know if anybody else in that moment experienced that. I was just like, ooh, baby. Like, I just got goosebumps from you saying that because I lived that moment in my head with you. And that's a cool shared moment in a weird way that we get as fans. But that's an epic moment. But can you talk real quick as we get out of the tournament mindset? But the last topic here on the tournament would be, besides the putt to win it, the playoff putt, what would you think in your mind is maybe some of the top one, two, or three biggest moments of the whole tournament, things where it went your way?
Well, if I was to pick a couple, I mean, it's 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, and the playoff. Like, that stretch right there. Someone told me that hole 14, Ricky was in the same spot. He threw a forehand long about 35-40 past the basket and right into that headwind. They said Ricky had that same spot and he kind of almost bounced it there, but I was able to read it and put it in the basket, get my birdie. So I got 13 and 14 back to back after double bogeying 12, and then the par save was really big because that big putt 16, even though I made the par there, it allowed me to make that putt on 17. You know, I was able to look at that and take that moment of such a bad putt and turn it into a huge make on 17. And then 18, just barely missing that putt, again, gave me the confidence going into the playoff on that putt on 18, because it was a shorter putt, obviously, but it was a similar win. And I knew exactly where to put that disc in order to make it. So each one of those, you know, those misses led to the next make that I had. So that was by far my most important. You know, you can look at the first round and see some of the big par saves I had after going into the hazards, or you can see some of the big shots that I threw in the second round. But I think the one that put me in the best position was round three, but that was the entire round. So, yeah, I think if I did have to pick it, though, it was right there at the final stretch from 14 on.
Wow.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I don't know if Nick has any other question on the tournament, but we do have circulating around social media right now that you bagged a fan's disc that they gifted to you. One, is that obviously, I'm sure that's true, but secondly, how often do you do that? How often does something like that happen? Can you tell us how that went down from your perspective?
Now, this next part is super dope. I'm just letting everyone know now.
Yeah, I can tell you how it went down. How often? Probably more often than people would think. But yeah, so what happened was I finished my first round. And on hole 12, I was going for the green, I guess. It's not just on an island, but I was going for the green, trying to carry over the OB. And I threw my Z-Onyx, the ones that they just kind of released as a limited edition. I threw it and, it flipped over into the trees. And I was like, what happened here? And, I didn't think about it, but in practice, I was throwing the hyzers on 14. And they kept coming up and hitting the concrete road. So I didn't really think too much about it. But once I got into the tournament, it was kind of a little bit flippier than I anticipated. Flipped into the trees. So after the round, I don't remember the kid's name. But after the round, this kid was standing in line for autographs. And he said, hey, can I give you this? And I was like, But you just want to give me that disc? He's like, yeah, I dyed it. I want to give it to you. So I was like, all right, like I just was going to take this Onyx out of my bag. So let's trade. So I gave him my, Z Onyx, and, he gave me that Onyx, and I went out to the field the next day. Yeah, I went out the next day. So I put it in my bag. I left it in there just so my bag wouldn't rattle around. I wasn't going to put a new one in my bag because I did have another. I still had three in my bag, but threw it out in the practice field. I was like, oh, my gosh, this is exactly – it, like, fits right with the other three I have. It, like, fills the slot that I'm missing. So I actually threw it the next day on hole 12 and got it in bounds, and I missed my putt. And then I threw it on – I think I threw it on 18 day three, and then I threw it on 18 day four. And I told Steph Curry, my caddy, I said, all right, I'm going to throw that kid's disc right here on 18 and win with it. And I almost did. But, yeah, so it's definitely in my bag, and he's got my Z Onyx black one with the gold stamp.
People absolutely love that. I think it tells a lot about who you are, and as an athlete, that you're like, hey, this is my
tool. Like that is right. It doesn't just matter as a player. This is stuff like that's the reason why he is a
questions. We've taken up enough of your time. Is there anything that you want to announce to the world? I always give this opportunity to guests because sometimes there's something just
like that about wraps up this interview because he just basically didn't do any shout outs now at this point. But knowing Paul Macbeth and being the GOAT, he has so many gosh dang things going on in his life that he doesn't really have that many things to, like, talk about or, like, the sponsorships, like, what, any, like, big things coming up. So, yeah. But, yeah, Paul Macbeth, man, that's just stuff like that makes him, gives me reasons on why I absolutely love everything about him. So, but, all right. That about wraps up USDGC. Now moving into our Disc Golf Pro Tour Championship weekend. And that starts tomorrow at 1:30 Central, our time, with the bottom 16 starting off and then going to a quarterfinal facing the people who had a bye to the quarters. And then, so after that, we'll go with whoever wins that, we'll go to the semis and start finals. And the Tour Championship is going to be down in North Carolina at Hornets Nest, where it'll see the top 32 men MPO players and the top 16 FPO players going at it for the main prize. And ladies and gentlemen, may I just say, the big prize is a beaut. Because, like I have said in the past episode, I think episode 3 or 4, that the Disc Golf Pro Tour is going to be sponsored by Guaranteed Rate for the payouts, as well as Johnson L. Bean and also Jace Johnsonville. So, for the MPO, it'll see that players who just play the first round, even if they don't make it to the first round, will get $2,000 just for making it to the event, as the FPO will see $2,500, because for the MPO, they're doing 4 rounds, as for the women are doing 3. And then round 2 for the MPO will see $3,000 for players just for making it to the second round, as well as $4,000 for the women. Round 3 for the men will be $5,000, which will be just for making it to the semis. And then the top 4 who make it to the finals, the payouts for the men go as follows. $8,000 for the men, as well as for the women. And then 3rd place will receive $10,000, 2nd place to receive $15,000, and 1st place to receive $30,000. It is the biggest payout, cash payout, of the not just the Disc Golf Pro Tour, but disc golf in general. And the fact that the men are, and the women are going to take home $2,000 and $2,500 just for playing the first round and making it to the thing, and having that more than a big A tier, is absolutely incredible. So this will take place starting tomorrow, October 14th to the 17th at Hornets Nest Park in Charlotte, North Carolina. So, and breaking news, as unfortunately as any of you have not heard yet, Gavin Rathbun will not be performing in this. He is still dealing with shoulder issues. I did actually text him yesterday because there was a rumor on Twitter. If you have not, don't follow Hunter Thomas. He did put out saying that there was rumor speculating that Gavin was switching to Dynamic Disc for a 2-year contract. I did ask him and send him that tweet just as a follow-up. He did confirm that that was not true by saying, sheesh, I still have a thing with Discmania. I did see that earlier. But as of right now, he's still in Discmania. That could be complete. He could be telling the truth, though. You know, as a pro, he could be not telling me the truth. They could actually be a thing, and he's just doing that as a cover-up, which I don't blame him. But Gavin, if you're lying to me, I'm going to be very, very upset. But he is not going to be playing because of that, so Anthony Barella will be taking his spot. And also, as of today, Eagle McMahon will not be in the Disc Golf Pro Tour Championships. And to give us more details on that was the man himself, Mr. Eagle McMahon, at the Disc Golf Pro Tour Championship press conference earlier today.
Back here with Eagle McMahon, and breaking unfortunate news for you this weekend, man. I'll just turn it over to you. What's going on?
Yeah, so yesterday I was doing this little Joe Mez shoot. We were in this dark room, and I was just messing around. What it was essentially there. I don't know how much I can disclose, but they're essentially shooting a video on like form comparison. They had a super expensive camera there, and just throwing some shots. And it wasn't one of the shots that we even filmed. I was just going in, and I just threw this kind of random, what we call it, was a fake out 360 where you spin counterclockwise and kind of like essentially putt the disc forward. And I did that on top of, you know, my 360 motion. So I kind of just lunged my shoulder forward, and I'm pretty sure I dislocated my shoulder to a certain extent. And for like a good 20 seconds afterwards, my shoulder was just kind of like hanging there, and I kind of like push it back in. And I kind of felt faint, kind of felt like I was going to throw up. And in that moment, I'm like, oh, no, that's definitely not good.
Well, I know everybody at home, all your fans at home are asking, you know, how are you feeling right now? And have you gotten a chance to get it looked at and get an assessment?
I talked with Seth. He was kind of the first person I called from Disc Golf Strong. And I met with him this morning, and he did some range of motion tests. And they're all really good signs. You know, there's not like excruciating pain in any which way. So he doesn't know without an MRI, but we're fairly certain, just based off his expertise, that it's not a tear or anything. It's just badly strained. And unfortunately, right now, that is not good, because I don't believe I'll be able to compete this week. Or let's say I'm not going to compete this week, just because I feel like my chances of throwing a score on this course that would put me in a competitive position are extremely low, and I'm not that good with my left hand yet.
So unfortunately, due to issues with shooting a video, Eagle McMahon dislocated his throwing shoulder, and he is out for the Disc Golf Pro Tour Championships, which Aaron Gossage will move to the 32nd spot, and everybody starting, Eagle was the number one seed, everybody who was down from top two and lower will just move up a spot, adding Aaron Gossage into the 32nd spot. But your bracket for the MPO looks like this, starting tomorrow with your, with 17, Jeremy Kohling. This is all in order from 17 to 32. We'll see Big Germ, Jeremy Kohling, Paul Ulibarri, Gannon Burr, Chris Clemens on one card, Thomas Gilbert, Emerson Keith, Ben Callaway, Bradley Williams on another card, Andrew Presnell, Colton Montgomery, Chandler Fry, my boy Chandler Fry, and Nathan Queen. And then rounding out the final card for the men on the first day is Raven Newsom, Zacharias Johnson, Anthony Barella, and Aaron Gossage. And then the quarterfinals, the people who got a by the quarterfinals were Chris Dickerson, Ezra Aderholt, Joel Freeman, Drew Gibson, Andrew Marweed, Matty O, Matt Oram, Garrett Gerthy, and Matt Bell. And then the other four spots will be the top four players who made it to past the first round. And then semifinals, getting a bye into that, is Ricky Wysocki, Calvin Heimberg, Paul McBeth, Adam Hammes, Kyle Klein, last year's winner, 2020 winner, Kevin Jones, James Conrad, and Nico LeCastro. And then the last top four will be winners of the, whoever got the top four in the quarterfinals. As for the FPO, like I said, it would be the top 16, and they start Friday, and it starts off as this, where numbers 5 through 16, and your women starting Saturday will be, or Friday, will be Haley King, Jessica Weiss, Kona Panis, Lisa Fakis, Heather Young, Deanne Carey, Rebecca Cox, Owen Scoggins, Juliana Korber, the 5-time world champ, Kat Murch, Madison Walker, and Holly Finley. And then making it to the semifinals, of course, is no-brainer. Paige Pierce, Katrina Allen, Missy Gann, and Sarah Hokum. And rounding out that would be the quarterfinals top four players. So, those are your cards for the MPO and the FPO for the Tour Championships. And as it goes for my picks for this, as it comes for the men, let me just say my major pick, I do truly believe that who I think is going to win, and I believe that Ricky will pull it off. It's going to be either between Ricky or I'm going to say Ricky or James Conrad. Those are my top two picks for the MPO, Ricky and James Conrad. Who I want to see win it, I would love to see Kevin Jones win it again. Not only is that, but actually getting a win this year on the Disc Golf Pro Tour as well as the PDGA. Or I would also like to see Paul McBeth win it as he just came off a big win at USDGC. As for my dark horses, my two dark horses for this would be, of course, my boy Chandler Frye. And also Raven Newsom. So Chandler Frye and Raven Newsom will be my dark horse picks for the MPO. As for the FPO, who I truly believe will win this year, I just truly believe it'll come down between Haley, Paige, or Kat. I'm sure I'll be wrong, but I just feel like after Paige had that massive blow-up at USDGC Round 3, I just feel like she's going to be coming for that kill. Plus, she's never won the Disc Golf Pro Tour Championships, and being that this is the highest paid payout for the women, not only for the women, but also for the men, I can see Paige going after this. So it would my picks would be between those three. Who I would like to see win, would be my girl Katrina Allen and Sarah Hokum. And then my dark horse picks, I am picking Lisa Fakus and Rebecca Cox. Or no, I'm sorry. Lisa Fakus, Rebecca Cox, and Juliana Korber. So those are my top three dark horse picks. Starting with Juliana Korber, Rebecca Cox, and Lisa Fakus. So, like I said, that'll start this weekend, or starting tomorrow, from October 14th to the 17th, and it is the final tournament of the Disc Golf Pro Tour 2021 season. So you will not want to miss this on the Disc Golf Network, with the final round being shown on the Disc Golf Pro Tour's YouTube channel. So, alright guys, well, that about does it for episode 6 of Off the Chains. I want to thank all my viewers and listeners out there for spending an hour with me every Wednesday night at 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock, wasting your time with me and listening to me talk anything disc golf. So I appreciate you guys for that. Join me next week as I will be recapping the Disc Golf Pro Tour Championships. As well as the tournament I got coming up, the Illinois Valley Invitational. Like I said, if you have not signed up for that yet, please do. It is being ran by Casey Glade. She is a phenomenal player and even more a phenomenal person. And it is a fantastic tournament and courses to play. So please sign up for that. But other than that, guys, tell someone you love them this week, because not every day you know is guaranteed. And I'm going to close out this episode with a song, as today will be game one of the 2021-2022 National Hockey League season for my Chicago Blackhawks. And I'm ending my episode because Jake Farmer is a Pittsburgh Penguins fan. And also, I'm doing this just for him. So other than that, guys, tell someone you love them this week, because not every day is guaranteed. I will end it with this song, and I will see you guys next week. Peace! Someone said you was asking out to me, but I know you're best as a black girl. I
tell me your name, is it sweet? She said my boy is Dagger. Oh yeah. I was gone, she was hard, stealing everything to go. I was born, she was over, the worst of it. Give me gear, thank you dear, bring your sister over here. Let her dance with me just for that.